coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, are you ready to rumble? It is...
Am I on Whippets again? What's going on here?
I was just creating the mental energy coming from your head.
You don't even know what my mental energy sounds
oddly
like.
Oddly enough, when you do the mental energy, you inevitably start going, wow, 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 wow.
See, mine comes in with a flute loop, like,
I love flute loops.
Like the Shaft theme song. So you're going, whoa, whoa. It's like, hoot-a-doot, 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 doo. That's why I don't have.
Like I said, I love the Flute Loop cereal because it's floutily delicious.
What type of flout are we flouting? Back to playing the bone flout again? I think that was like a year and a half ago. That was a topic on the show. Eddie, I blame you for that.
A flautist, Peter. A flautist.
Yes, so welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston.
Wow. Hello there.
He's not actually talking to you.
Speaking to you from my mind.
He is, always. I'll be asleep and he'll be like, Andy, what you doing? I'll be like, God, it's 4 a.m. Stop it.
I'm like MODOK with a regular people body.
Well, sorry. No, you definitely do not have MODOK's body. That's for damn sure.
No, it's like if MODOK had like a regular sized head.
Right. But power's in concordant with the size of that head, you know. You have listened to us scrape and fight our way through 4 issues of this story arc. You have found us on the 5th issue. This is issue 215 of a story arc called Sci-Fi. Where,
I want to point out, this is the first time you've actually spoken that.
I know, right? I think I would wait. I was building anticipation to this. Godlike is the name of this issue. This whole story arc was Cole's brainchild, no pun intended, and it has gone wonderfully. It has taxed
us.
It
was a brainchild, a star child.
It has taxed us.
A Destiny's child.
Oh, no. I'll be the Kelly Rowlands to your Beyonce. it's been everything that a story arc should be.
Wait till you see my pregnancy photos.
And now I just had that. I can't. Speaking of psionics, I can't unpaint that mental image. Did you hear me stop? Did you hear my brain see it?
I did. It would be like if you took that that female MODOK.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was doing like the Demi Moore.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the one. But no, so this we are basically, this is it. This is the end of this thing. So we are, the sled is headed down the hill into the forest. Who knows what's going to happen. But Cole, where do you want to start Godlike? This is your thing. I want you to take us out of here. So
yeah, this is the point where it really gets, I think, some very serious exploration of the idea of psionics taking you so far beyond, naturally it would start with the level of, say, Professor X and Magneto, because they have these godlike powers, but they're still actually a little more grounded than most.
Yeah.
They have their agendas, and they have their things they want to do, and they have hobbies, and they vacation separately. But,
they each have their space and their hobbies. No, but is it believable, just to piggyback off of what you were just saying, is it believable to have those powers and still be grounded enough to be like, I'm going to fight for mutant kind or for humanity and not just say, screw it, I'm going to live in a world that I built where you guys don't exist and I get to drink past blue ribbon without ever getting a hangover and eat cheese sticks without ever getting fat. Like, wouldn't that be the natural inclination? Like, are they better? Is the idea that they're better humans than humans?
Oh, absolutely. But I think in both cases, you have literally built into the characterization of both these diversely different ideologues.
Right.
Is this obsessive desire to, you know, fulfill some sort of inner need. So in a way, that's what holds them in check. Either one of them, especially Professor X, could just eat Cheetos ad nauseum, because he could actually just go into the body of a fat guy, take over his brain, eat whatever the hell he wanted, make that guy fatter, and meanwhile, you know, he just remains in the trim.
That's horrible. Think about that as a power, to just be able, and I know that that's been explored a little bit, you know, but really think about the things well, I mean, you could do. Like,
in the Muggerville universe, Eat Man was... It was sort of like a low-rent matter-eater lad, because all he could eat was proper food.
Right.
Whatever happened to be in the kitchens of those he took over. But he had the mental power to literally, like, channel sustenance without the caloric. And, you know, he like, get the good carbs and leave all the bad carbs behind in his victims. So, and they were powerless.
They're powerless against him, yes.
Yeah. And 98% of the time, no one knew that he was there.
That 2% of the time is when he would make eye contact with you and not break it and be like, eat it.
Well, it would just be kind of like while you were chewing, and you're, of course, you know, as you notice this creepy guy watching you, you're kind of slowing your chewing, and he's just kind of watching and nodding and encouraging. And that's why he tries to avoid that. Most of the time, he'll just, like, drive outside your house and take over your brain and use it to see what's in the fridge. It's kind of like war driving.
What's like war driving?
Yeah. you know, where you drive around, see if you can hack into people's Wi-Fi.
Is that what it's like?
It is exactly like that.
Except okay. Hacking into their brains to force them to eat all of the...
Yeah, like, oh, wow, you got a can of Libby's corned beef hash there. That's a... that's man chow is what that is.
I liked the five-issue mini that you did where he found the guy that was an apocalypse hoarder, and he just made him eat three cases of Vienna sausages in one sitting.
Well, then that one where he, like, watched The Simpsons and then forced a guy to eat 100 slices of American cheese.
Oh, cool. All right, let's bring it back around.
That is a godlike power in its own right.
So I guess what I was asking was, what is the natural reaction to having power so far removes you, and you become the other?
I think ultimately... it almost seems like limitations are inevitability. It's like Superman arrives, you know, to take it a little away from psionics in a sense, except that maybe it's all psionics with him as well, that the red sun simply activated his natural Kryptonian psionics. But Superman arrives on Earth.
Okay.
And some variable time later, everything that was once Krypton, bits of it make it to Earth as well. So it's like, you know, nature, the universe wants there to be limiters, because the one thing the universe doesn't, it's bad enough you got somebody going around manipulating time, space, or other things that the universe doesn't normally allow.
Right.
So eventually the universe starts to push back and creates limits, like kryptonite or making you really obsessed with mutant rights. Or, you know, being at the forefront of making mutants the top dog. Because, as you know, we're the future, Charles, not damn them.
It, damn it. We're the future, Charles, not them. damn it. You'd think if they were that Halle Berry wouldn't have delivered that lightning line to Toad in that movie if they were really a superior race, but that's beside the point.
You know, oddly enough, I very recently stumbled on an article that explained that there was going to be a running gag with Toad.
Oh, no.
Wait, you was a Toad. Wrong movie.
Wrong movie.
But where Toad would have this running gag about saying, well, you know what happens to a toad when?
Oh no.
Now, while that helps explain Halle Berry's incredibly awkward line, it does, even the running gag doesn't work.
It's, yeah.
It's not like there's an old series of aphorisms about what happens to toads. It's not like, you know, curiosity killed the cat. Cats have 9 lives. You can go on for days with cat aphorisms.
Right. You butter some toast, and you tape it to a cat, and you drop it off a building, and that whole thing. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's a long way to go, but...
Yeah. Especially at the bottom of the building. But yeah, exactly.
Waka, waka.
So we'll dispense with Toad for now. But I think that really there comes a point where the universe is demanding some sort of limitations. And then there are some psionics that say, up that. That's when they decide, you know, tonight's really stupid side of it for a while.
So give me an example.
Or the John Perch. And something about like, you know, tag, you're it, the big old bunch of kryptonite. Like, then you get some mega mofo psionics who just don't have limitations. Powers continue to grow all the time. You know, we didn't speak of Darkseid actually being a psionic.
Oh, absolutely.
His powers are beyond those of mortal new gods or immortal new gods.
Yeah, the thing I like about the new gods was that... They were a super powerful race, but each individual person within the race had their own power, effectively making them psionic in the terms defined by this story arc. So you have, like, you know, Metatron, you have the Allfather, you have Big Barda, you have Orion, you have Darkseid being, you know, Chief Justice among them. with his, as we've said before, Omega Beams, which... We thought the Omega Beams were a, you know, just basically incinerated or vaporized people. Later, we found out, what do they do, Cole?
They time bullet.
Goddamn time bullets are back.
Well, I wonder if it's multiple choice, though. Like, you could dial it in, like, you know, set for stun. You know, you could literally, like, depending on how he squints or... you know, like gives you the skunk eye or whatever, it might incinerate you, it might time bullet you, because why waste good time bullets on like parademons that failed at their task?
I still love the idea that we postulated back however long it was.
Oh, good lord.
Because he time bullets in the death of Bruce Wayne after Final Crisis. He hits him with the Omega Beams. Bruce Wayne pops up in the, you know, prehistoric man period. You know, I don't remember whether it was Cro-Magnon.
I guess you could call that the Andro period in DC Comics, because that's when Andro and family were running around with the caveman, the young caveman with the perpetually pregnant wife.
Right. So he pops up there, but I love
he had like the gestation period of an elephant.
But he has to then claw his way through time to get back to our time period, which I love the postulation that, because Vandal Savage was started from that time period as well. If you read the comic, you know, he found the meteor gave him immortal life, and since then he's been, you know, amassing an unfair advantage over everyone.
Well, especially the fact that he put a penny, or actually a drachma, in a like a Venetian or, you know, ancient Roman bank, and he's still just been living off the interest.
Well, of course, why wouldn't you? Like, that's, you know, handed it down from quote unquote generation to generation.
Yeah, and even though they didn't have banking then, that's the damnedest part of it. I think that's a psionic power.
But I love the circular logic behind the fact that what ends up happening is Darkseid nails all these, like, new gods and heroes and villains and parademons that get in his way, and Uber drivers and pizza delivery guys and whoever it might be, back to this time period, which
that
then...
That creep that got his parking space.
Right.
Which, right? He was signaling, for God's sake.
Which then creates this... I guess biosphere of metagened superhumans that then propagate through the ages to come back to fight him again in the same time period, which in turn he bamfs them back there, and it just circular.
He bamfs them. I like that.
Yeah, just circular logic just keeps happening. You know, it's just Bruce Wayne pops up and, like, you know, Timmy the Chinese food delivery guy three different versions of Elongated Man. Poor Vandal Savage, who at this point doesn't have any superpowers. He's just back there with a bunch of damn parademons. Like, what the hell is happening right now? That was one of the greatest logical leaps this show has ever made. It's like that whole Batman came back and turned into the Joker so that Batman would have a reason to continue to, you know, and shot his parents so that Batman have a reason to exist to fight Darkseid to then go.
Oh,
just
it actually even goes beyond that. It was a product of Octopus Judo Batman.
Oh no!
who had like one of these "It's a Wonderful Life" moments. Judo Batman, you won't exist.
Hey, listen, Jimmy Stewart was the greatest psionic ever to exist.
So true. Did you ever see The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance? Psionics.
Did you ever see To Kill a Mockingbird?
I tell you, every time, psionics.
So, damn it.
There's no way he could have shot Liberty Valance. I don't care how well trained.
There's no way Big Iron shot Liberty Valance.
Yeah, it was all psionics. He just didn't know he had him.
He just didn't know. That's the key. So, who is in your mind really encapsulates this idea of moving past the human condition? Because, like we said, it's not Xavier. It's not Magneto. You know, it's not even a few of the others we're going to talk about in this, like Franklin Richards, who's still a boy, even though he might be the most powerful being in the known cosmos. Still a boy.
Especially because he can, at will, reenact not only every scene from, but scenes that didn't make it into Big. He has willed himself into a pseudo-adulthood before. Had to look down in horror at what happened to his just below his midriff, which shocked him back into normal childhood. He did the research, asked some questions. Mom and Dad told him about the birds and the bees. Actually, Sue told him because, God, Reed just went on and on about, like, you know, on a chromosomal and molecular level and how the, you know, subtle chemical balances in gestation will cause my, like, shut up! Just tell him! You put it in the hole! And,
tell him what my dad told me.
That's a hillbilly kind of.
Actually, this works well on two levels if you're in the Fantastic Four. What my dad told me was make sure you put on your spacesuit before you blast off. Which, first of all, works for the Birds and the Bees talk. Second of all, especially works for the Fantastic Four, because if they would have done it in the first place, they wouldn't have been in this situation.
Exactly. If Reed had remembered to wear his little spacesuit.
By the way, with...
But, of course, there is the possibility, since they've all had their powers by then, that Sue just sort of, like, you know, bored a little invisible hole in it with her...
damn it.
With her force field power. I mean, she could probably shape it like a little drill bit. or a scissor.
That line seemed like a lyric to a George Thorogood "The Destroyer" song, and I don't know why. I'm really trying to wrap my head around. But you know, here's the thing about Franklin Richards is Franklin Richards was a member of the Power Pack.
Oh, that's right.
Now, with Franklin Richards being a member of the Power Pack at, like, 12 years old could have strode mightily across the land and ruled with an apocalyptian four horsemen iron fist all that they surveyed. But instead, were like, oh, we're going to go get ice cream in our pajamas. We're superheroes.
Well, I think in that case, they had a combination of childlike innocence, having been gifted their powers through magic, if I'm not mistaken, or magic technology or technological magic.
Right.
And also having been mentored by a Pokemon.
Is that right?
Yeah, Snoozle Horse.
That's right. They had a stupid alien seahorse. God damn it. Yes, they did. That stupid alien seahorse.
It was a Pokemon.
It was. You're right. I was like, what
is Pokemon when Pokemon wasn't cool?
I was sitting around like, I was sitting here going, what is he talking about? Oh, damn it. Damn that thing. Yes. But the other thing, what you've got to realize.
Damn it all to hell.
Also, keep in mind the fact that when Onslaught decided to wreak all level of havoc, which, by the way, Onslaught itself, one of the greatest psionic powers ever to exist in the Marvel Universe, the combination of Magneto and Professor X, when it decided to wreak all havoc and ended up destroying the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, the X-Men, it was Franklin Richards that created the Heroes Reborn universe so they could blame it on a child and not Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee. Franklin Richards.
Simultaneously, they were blaming it on a child.
I mean, right. No, it was, now everything's going to be Jimmy Stewart to me. No, it was Franklin Richards. It wasn't. But if you remember reading the comics, which if you ever did, I'm sorry. There were a few decent issues of it, but he carries around the Heroes Reborn universe as a blue ball that he has had with him forever, but he put the universe inside of this little blue ball that he carries.
Oh, so there's like a whole alternate universe going on, kind of Men in Black style, in his pocket.
Right. Well, I think it's bigger than that. I think it's like a gym ball size ball.
Oh, okay. So it's like a dodgeball kind of ball.
I call it the St. Elsewhere's effect.
Oh, okay.
Where the entirety of the show St. Elsewhere's happened in the snow globe of that kid at the end of the series.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so essentially that's what happened.
So it's just basically a dying boy's wish.
Yeah, exactly.
And there was that kid had a very sophisticated imagination.
Right, and not to mention the fact that, that if you remember right, at the time of Onslaught's undoing of what was most of the Marvel Universe at that point, Iron Man was a kid. Do you remember that?
I thankfully didn't really follow any of that period.
At that period of time.
I'm going to defer to you on all of that.
Yeah, things had kind of gone to hell. But he of course, because he remembered Iron Man being Tony Stark the adult, made him Tony Stark the adult, because he remembered the thing looking like the thing, you know, the Rocky thing and not the weird thing that they had, you know, over 20 years had bastardized.
Yeah.
Into what looked like a something that Kirk would break off, put into a bamboo shoot, and shoot at a Gorn. you know, all of those things. So that it allowed them an awesome MacGuffin to get out of all of the things that they had done because they blamed it on a kid. It was the kid. What are you going to do? The dog farted.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, DC, to unmake and remake their universe, back in the 80s had the Crisis on Infinite Earths. Which arguably the Monitor and Anti-Monitor were psionics,
right?
And the Great White Effect from the Skin of Our Teeth was converted into the Crisis on Infinite Earths. Three people who are theatrical in nature will get that joke, but they, you know, they basically DC. Unmade and remade their universe, and they left the hell alone for a while. Marvel likes to do like hard targeted reboots and revamps that don't last. I mean, none of it lasts. We did whole issues on this, but Marvel likes to do this a lot because Heroes Reborn. What else do you have? House of M.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they do it every 20 minutes. It's
easily. But it's always like, or very often, just a single catalyst. In this case, talking about Godlike, the inexplicable hex powers of Scarlet Witch.
Oh, my God.
Extrapolated, you know, to a 700 decimal point number, you know, order of magnitude.
Right.
When she literally just sort of said, you know, it would be cool as if I was completely crazy and whatever, and I just sort of read Red King the world into existence.
Well, think about the other thing that she did with her psionic ability. What led up to the House of M is that she decided that she had twins and willed them into existence.
Oh, that's right.
With the Vision.
And Vision was like, whoa, Billie Jean, I wore the spacesuit.
And in order to... And Billie Jean. That was a twofer. You went for the twofer. You went for a callback joke and straight into a Michael Jackson riff. That was solid work, my friend. That was solid work.
Thank you.
Somebody's ramping up for HawkCon. Somebody's working on his hard 5-minute set for HawkCon. What actually caused that break, the House of M, for her to, like you said, Red King the entire Marvel Universe, was Professor Xavier having to go in and Maury Povich the situation. And over here, Vision's backstage jumping up and down like, ain't my kid. I told you, that ain't my kid. I told you, church is chick. And then she just like snaps her finger and everything's gone.
Exactly. It's like, you know, if I can't have it my way. And then...
So read House of M, kids, if that doesn't whet your appetite.
And that's one of the things I love about the show, is it literally is like the epitome of verb. That's what's happening, because we have created more verbs on this show.
We just Maury Povich, Billie Jean.
That's right.
But yes, no, yeah, absolutely. No, you could not be more right, because nobody understands her powers, including the people who write her powers.
I don't even Stan Lee's like, I don't know. Like, I like the name Scarlet Witch.
Like, what do we call this? Like, she can do... You've told me that she can do anything. Call them hex powers. Like, what? Why?
What does it even mean? It means I have no idea. Just shut up and draw.
That's right. It's the Kanye West of comic book characters.
Don't mess with the bullpen, son. You'll get the horns.
Nicely done. You could not be more correct. And I think along the same lines, God, I wish I was having the same wines, along the same lines as that, but way more defined, okay? So much more it, within its lane, and you're going to have to speak to this more than I will, is Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. And here you have, granted, Watchmen used to...
God, why are you always talking about Watchmen?
Yeah, well, Watchmen used to exist in a singular universe.
Yes.
That didn't have to adhere to anything, even the things I impose upon the comic universes of Marvel and DC. And in that sense, what I said earlier about, you know, the universe building in its countermeasures, as it were. Oh, recall the last issue. So,
I literally just heard your brain go and give a thumbs down. Like, in your brain, my psionic ability to hear your brain in your own head go and give a thumbs down. It actually just happened.
How dare you use the mouth part to make that thing come out of it? And then I'm the one who gets blamed, like Rob LaField.
When you crop dust somebody and then blame somebody else, can we call that LaFielding somebody?
I would like that.
Okay,
yeah,
we've coined that term. Ladies and gentlemen, please use that freely at all con this year. LaField everybody see.
Yeah, if you get a chance, LaField people, and just say, what? That was just the lilies of the LaField.
Oh, my God. All right. Keep going.
Okay.
You were heading down the Manhattan. Yes.
So as we look at Dr. Manhattan, he has that kind of, I think inevitably the comic book tropes sink in, but they're not necessarily adhering to the same kind of universe in this case. But what you have here is a situation where the limiter for Dr. Manhattan is he is pure science. He is a man of science who is devoted to the nature of the way the world works and has had that opened up to him. And in a way, he's also grounded. The less human he becomes, he's still grounded in this humanity because he can't escape his humanity. Because simultaneous to everything he does, even his farewell to Ozymandias at the end of the series, spoiler! even in that moment, he is simultaneously living the moments of his childhood, of his university years, of his time at Rascal Flats, or whatever the hell the name of Gila Flats.
Rascal Flats! Was it like at a Rock Out on the Range concert?
It was heavy science and heavy music. It was just sort of like a Woodstock for brainiacs, you know.
I would love to go to that. If you could set me up with that.
It's home on the brains, and you know, every moment he is living every moment simultaneously. So in that sense, his the power itself grounds him. Up to the point that, you know, he simultaneously knew from the moment he and Laurie hooked up that he and Laurie would hook up even before then, and also that his dad would push him into science, and that he would eventually decide, you know, it would be fun is to go off somewhere in the universe and make my own, create life myself. So he is sort of the God become man becomes God becomes man becomes God.
Right, but also it's not for lack of trying to remove his humanity, because he takes off to the moon and builds his clockwork castle for a while and removes himself.
The moon we call Mars.
Oh, is it Mars?
I have to be a little pedantic.
Please be pedantic, because if anybody's allowed to be pedantic in my general direction about Watchmen, it's you, sir. But yes, to go to Mars and build his clockwork castle, try to remove himself from humanity, only to be pulled back in by, you know, the plight of one person, not society as a whole, but it's a really, of course, it's Watchmen, so it's perfect.
Yeah,
there's no.
It is unassailably perfect.
That's right. But yeah, that one always struck me as a. As a man, like you said, man becomes God, becomes man, becomes God.
And especially because Moore creates a character that is virtually limitless in power. He is Firestorm times a million.
Right.
Because and therein lies the beauty of the character, when a comedian, for example, admonishes him that, you know, you stood there and watched me murder someone. When you had it within your power to prevent it, you know, he could have teleported Comedian across the street or across the world. He could have, as Comedian himself says, he could have turned the bullets into water vapor, or the gun into flowers, or something like that. And it just, and all I could think of was, you know, things where you see Firestorm doing exactly that sort of thing, like mm-hmm. when Killer Frost is hurling, staring daggers at him, in this case, hurling them made of ice, and he's just sort of yawning, and they're turning into daisies as he's standing, you know, as each one comes within his vicinity, which, you know, brings up Firestorm, another incredibly powerful psionic who is sort of a shared psionic entity. And when we talk godlike, we need to talk about entities that are literally a psionic incarnate.
And there are multiples of those. The first one that comes to mind, at least for me, is Proteus of the X-Men. Just pure psionic horror. If there was ever a true monster, I would say, like actual horror character. In comic books that I don't think ever got its due, that wasn't a werewolf or a vampire, you know, or a mummy.
Or a Dr. Victor Frankenstein's monster.
Right.
The quote Comedy Bang Bang.
Dr. Victor Frankenstein's monster was Proteus, the pure – so born of – you know, born of man and woman, born of seed and egg.
born of lack of spacesuit.
He, you know, his mutant ability manifests, burns his people body to a husk, leaving him only an entity of pure psionic ability akin to the Invisible Man, almost, where you no longer are held within the bounds of human society. It doesn't matter. Like,
oh, absolutely. And what's interesting is even Proteus had a limiter, a very unfortunate one, in that his psionic, this being of psionic energy could not operate without a physical form, mm-hmm. that would inevitably be burned out by the presence of this insane amount of energy. It couldn't be contained for any great length of time, so he was constantly having to go and, you know, show a little leg to attract somebody over if he was in a girl body, or just say, hey, buddy, come here, and you know, just suck all of their, you know, abandon his husk and kind of trade places, leave them to die, or if they, I can't remember if they were pulled into his, what remained of him, and subsequently died in short order, if they just died outright from being sucked.
I think he just eats their psyche and becomes their body until it burns out, which is horrifying.
Yes, it's a terribly frightening prospect.
It's biblically demonic what they wrote into this character. And, you know, it was scary, but I think now, if used correctly, if like Warren Ellis got a hold of this character and really wrote it, or a Clive Barker, God forbid, got a hold of this character, I wouldn't want to read it.
Yeah, because the places you could take Proteus are pretty frightening, and I think that they recognized to a certain degree, perhaps not to that degree, but I think that Claremont recognized that Proteus was either going to be incredibly self-limiting, or from an editorial standpoint, would run roughshod over the entire Marvel universe, and you can't have either.
Right.
So you literally have to let these characters burn themselves out in a single story, otherwise, you know, John Byrne gets them and then they burn.
And then they burn out with a Y and an E at the end. But
it's definitely an entity. I think sometimes the mutant psionic often becomes a it's almost seemingly like there are psionic energies that inhabit, almost like demonic possession, to go back to your biblical demonic nature, because the Phoenix Force was doing that same sort of thing, where Jean Grey was had godlike powers to begin with, and it just seemed like this entity, this Phoenix Force, zeroed in on her. And I can't help but wonder if Jean hadn't had the power set she had, or it hadn't manifested as well as it did, it's rather remarkable that Professor X wasn't already targeted before she came along.
I mean, that's you're absolutely right. I think that
it could be by the time the Phoenix Force, you know, got a whiff of Xavier, by the time it got there, it's like, dang, does he have no clue how much powerful? I'll take her instead.
Right. No, you're
It's like you think you found the perfect banana, and then you move the pick up that bunch, and there's a better bunch underneath.
Is that what it's like?
It's like that. Because when you know, from Alcott, when you find the perfect banana, you want to put it in a banana case.
Listen, you protect you protect that banana with all your worth. Precious cargo, my friend. Precious cargo. But no, you're absolutely right. Like, this thing hoves in from space. This giant psionic phoenix force, I guess is the only accurate term, you know, jumps into Jean Grey and makes her already powerful, you know, already possibly the most powerful psionic psychic on planet Earth, unimaginably powerful at that point. And why? Okay, so let me ask you this, because we're talking about godlike, and you have entities. You have psionic entities. You have things like the Phoenix Force, the Power Cosmic also.
Oh, goodness. That's good. The Power Cosmic, which, if I'm not mistaken, was introduced in, of all places, the Micronauts.
I think so. I think you're right, yeah.
When Captain Universe.
Yep.
Was born.
And it has jumped into various...
Just because you have unlimited, infinite power of the universe itself... Well, actually, I stand corrected. The Power Cosmic was what another ancient psionic, Galactus, would imbue upon his heralds.
But also, but you know, let's head your direction, because I like your direction better, which is the Captain Universe power.
That yeah, would... proving that you can have unlimited power but not a great imagination when giving yourself a nickname.
Well, do you need one at that point? Like, do you need to have a PR department and marketing optics?
When yeah, you're... it's kind of like Dr. Manhattan begrudgingly... burning a hydrogen atom into his forehead just to show him.
Just to be like, God, fine.
I'm the Captain Universe, so shut up.
Like, God damn it, fine. Does this make you happy? Is this what you wanted?
I seriously Pee Wee Herman, I just looked around and like, okay, the Basement of the Alamo. That's my name. Basement of the Alamo Man. Shut up.
Basement of the Alamo Man. I love it. Yeah. No, but like, I remember this, the Unipower, that's what it's called, the Unipower that gives the Captain Universe its power, jumping in my first, and it was in the Microverse. You are absolutely correct. Jumping into, Spider-Man.
Yes.
And riding around on Spider-Man.
The original Captain Universe was the kid that hung around with the Micronauts.
Right.
His name escapes me. If you haven't read the early Micronauts, it was a damned good series, by the way. For a while there, Marvel took these lackluster toys and turned them into insanely good science fiction.
Rom the Space Knight, ladies and gentlemen.
Indeed.
Hey, if you're listening right now, spoiler, Rom the Space Knight is going to be in a Don't Lose Your Geek Card question. Proof to me that you listen to the show.
Hey, there you go. Don't Lose Your Geek Card Kids Comics Edition. If you become a contestant, you've already been forewarned.
You've already got an answer. But the Captain Universe, basically limitless power.
Yeah. He literally is tapping the universe. So it's an essentially or potentially ever expanding power.
Right. Damn it. Unless it's actually regressing. We don't know. You don't know. Well,
it seriously regressed during, I believe it was, if memory serves, it was during Assistant Editors Month, or it may have been in a What If parody thing where Aunt May got the power cosmic.
Oh my God. Was it, I think that was in a What The or a What If, wasn't it?
Yeah, it may have been, where it was like, you know, she became Mayflower or something like that.
I want Neil deGrasse Tyson to get the power cosmic, and then it just becomes a giant circle jerk. Just him naked, slathered
in... It becomes a Mobius strip.
Just literal mental and literal masturbation around the universe. Just
it's just basically like this Mobius strip, like an M.C. Escher, and all it is just... Neil deGrasse Tyson's face just running over it constantly like it's a roller coaster.
I'm picturing that in my head now.
Science. That was actually played at the Home on the Brain. Right here. It's coming. And another psionic entity, I think, because... off a piece of the power cosmic or the unipower or something was, you know, when all kinds of other big piles of gases and matter and things were all being crushed by the forces of the galaxy and by the universe into nice comfortable little spheroid shapes.
Yes.
One of them decided, what the hell, I'm like self-aware, I'm going to be like a planetary Skynet. I'm going to be Ego the Living Planet.
Ah, yes. Yes.
Because Ego is a planet that can just sort of drive itself around like the Death Star.
Yeah, and never mind the fact that it's completely screwy with everything's gravitational pull, atmospheres.
Exactly. And the fact that his nose is 750 miles long.
Is that a true number?
No. I don't know. Nobody's actually done math there on how big his upper lip is or how long the hairs of his beard might be.
He's the only planet with a beard, ladies and gentlemen.
That's true. The bearded planet. That was actually in my cover. I don't know. We did ZZ Pop.
The bearded planet. So good.
So, challenge somebody, ZZ Top cover band, Bearded Planet, which, hideous. But plus, Ego is one of those he's the only planet that if Galactus comes along, he's like, just try it, I'll cut you.
I'll cut you. I want to speak to your manager.
But I think that's another of those cases of, you know, a psionic entity manifest that, again, is Firestorm, where it has to, like, ruin two people's day because it's a selfish, wanting psionic manifest.
Well, yeah, and they say it in all the research you do on Ego, and if you read the comics, especially, what was Quasar?
Yeah.
Where he was sort of the Mr. Miyagi to Quasar's The Karate Kid, that he has an extreme superiority complex that one would expect from a living effing planet.
Yeah, especially when he was training Quasar, and he'd be like, wax off, oh yeah, right there, yeah, okay, that's it.
Right
along the southern hemisphere.
Yeah, I need a Brazilian down my Brazil.
Yeah, it's basically is a big deforestation project.
It really is. Made a lot of pencils.
It's not Agent Orange.
Oh my God. So we're coming up against it. How do you want to wrap this up?
We need to wrap it up with. We talked about some massive heavy like Franklin Richards and Wanda Scarlet Witch. At one time, wasn't there like. Wasn't Magneto, like, running around in some really hip X-Men costume with a man with the Iron Mask?
Yeah, his name was Zorn.
Okay. I thought that was a case earlier in the issue that lived Quicksilver Son of Zorn.
It's Quicksilver Son of Zorn. no.
Yeah, mind blown there. Yeah.
That was after Xavier wiped his mind. And, God, X-Men, stop it. It's worse than the Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Well, you know what I enjoy is both Marvel and DC Universe have this. It's the Real Housewives of Atlantis.
Why hasn't anybody done that?
I don't know. You have, like, Mira and, what's her name, Dorma?
Yeah, you have Dolphin down there. You could have...
Yeah.
So...
Namor Rita.
So, not to be too topical and on the nose, but I think we should wrap this up. Tonight, as we record this, again, the show's evergreen, but suck it, is the airing of the pilot episode of a TV show based on an X-Men character that I think falls firmly into this category, and that is none other than the Flat Top Scion of abilities.
Like White Kid and Play himself.
I was tiptoeing around that. I'm glad you went right for it.
At this point, I have to make up for that joke that my brain hated. So, I'm trying to do my brain a solid here. So.
That was a good joke, though. I liked it.
But yes, none other than Legion.
That's right. Legion if you're nasty.
Oh, wow. That is nasty. Especially depending on how long you've left it unattended. But yes, Legion is now... Really, the only use I ever had for Legion was to borrow his hairstyle for the Atrocious Universe character Gasmaster. Seemed rather appropriate that Gasmaster have a wild hair that stood a yard and a half upward. But yeah, Legion was one of those characters that just represents... I think it's one of those things where either... No matter how you slice it, either it happened as a result of the power or... The power itself may, you know, you either by having the power long enough, you go crazy.
Right.
Or you go crazy because you just happen to have the power.
Right.
And can't handle it. Either way, you just sort of, you prince it and go crazy. Really a prince man not getting this?
I'm letting this, you already got me with the Billie Jean. I heard the prince. I gave the prince due deference. And
you were probably already hearing that song in your mind anyway when I said that, even before I said that.
My brain does weird things. So yeah, the idea of Legion is that he is, and we talked about Crazy Jane from the Doom Patrol. Which, by the way, we won't get back into her, but one thing about that character that I didn't realize was that she got her powers through the Dominator's gene bomb.
Oh, wow.
So she might have been one of the only ones to stick around after that whole Dominator's, Invasion?
Invasion! Invasion! With the exclamation point.
That's right. So, but yeah, so Legion has multiple personality disorder, or I forget what the new DSM calls it. But regardless, each of those personalities has its own power.
That's right. So it's kind of like the X-Men franchise mixed with Split.
I haven't seen it. Still want to.
It's like M. Night Shyamalan's X-Men.
God, you know what? That wouldn't be all bad.
No, it wouldn't. And happy I am that years and years and years ago was announced as supposedly having been a trilogy that wasn't going to happen is now going to have its second chapter.
So good. I could not be happier.
I need me some more Mr. Glass.
What could be, in case you don't know, we're talking about Unbreakable, what could be the finest superhero movie ever made for real?
I seriously would call it the most perfect superhero movie.
Yeah, they did.
Because it is flawless to the superhero genre on film in the way that Watchmen, there we go again, is to the comic genre. I am not overly familiar with Legion, so I honestly was not previously aware until we started doing this arc that the power structure was such that it was, which is kind of a neat idea.
Well, here's the question, though, about Legion that you have to ask yourself as we're wiping this down. It refers back to what you were talking about. Is that your wind it down noise?
Well, I said wiping it down.
Oh, so. I'll wipe it down.
I know you will.
I'll put on my bikini and wipe it down while I'm eating a Carl's Jr.
Wax on, wax off.
Did he get these powers, like you were saying earlier, because he has multiple personalities and it was an affectation, like you said, he had that whatever gene inside of him, you know, that psionics was there and then the mutant gene kicked in? Or is he the most powerful mutant ever to exist? Mind couldn't handle that power, so his mind fractured to support those
very
powers.
Very nice. Compartmentalizing. If he takes all of those powers like so many monsters and puts them in a bunch of little boxes like the end of Cabin in the Woods, spoiler, then
I need to watch that again.
Yeah, that's brilliant, actually, because that makes very much sense, especially in the context of where we've taken the idea of being a psionic, and that, or being Charles Xavier's offspring.
Just, it's a bad idea. Why would you do that?
But here, I will take your idea a step further.
Oh, let's hear it.
It was not his mind that fractured. His mind was fractured.
So, dang. So yeah. You're postulating that Charles got in there and broke it up.
Yeah. That Daddy recognized how bad things could be. And, you know, we already had all the, you know, it's been bad enough with Jean Grey and Magneto's girl. It's
Magneto's girl.
That, you know, some
Shelley Duvall is.
And I wish we'd, been on this during countermeasures, because that literally could have been a countermeasure.
Right.
The only way you can control Legion is to force Legion never to know how powerful Legion is.
It's perfect.
Because the personalities can't coexist. So he Sybilled her. Or Sybilled him, rather.
Damn it. Nice. Yes. Yeah. I like it.
Probably sit around, you know, watch, thinking, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? This is going to be worse than Phoenix. And all of a sudden, tonight on ABC, Wednesday night at the movies.
Bright light. That's it?
Yeah.
That's the one.
Thank you, Sally Field.
If I had a nickel.
And I think finally we are not going to do justice to this topic if we don't talk about DC's most powerful psionic.
Who's that?
Superman himself, I believe, or certainly Batman, who knows, because he's like gone out of his way to Legion everybody in any way possible.
Just put him in a box. Everybody gets a box. Oprah Winfrey of boxes.
Exactly.
Look under your chairs. Yeah.
You get a countermeasure, and you get a countermeasure, and you countermeasure, and you get a Nomac. But is Batman himself has acknowledged that this particular JLA member is probably the most powerful being in the universe, but is held in check by his own insanity. And that is, as we mentioned earlier in this series, one Eel O'Brien, a.k.a. Plastic Man.
See, I have a hard time, no pun intended, wrapping my head around that concept, but I see it. You know, I see it.
It's because one of the most brilliant uses of Plastic Man, I think, was in Action Comics.
Okay.
There was an issue where a story was told from his point of view, and he lives inside of a cartoon, which brilliantly, just through visuals, explained why he is a cartoon. And it allows a cartoon character to exist in a physical world.
Because he can, because he creates and commands his own universe.
Exactly. And the living in that cartoon universe is what holds him in check. If he had, you know, if he didn't have Abby Normal's brain.
Right.
In his head. I'm pretty certain that the jaw said Abby. It was, you know, without that balance, he could rule the universe because he can be and do anything. But instead, he just, you know, if he wants to do feats of massive strength, all he has to do is just ball up his biceps and all of a sudden a tattoo of a battleship can appear and start firing away at some unseen enemy.
That's true. That's true. If he wants to be as fast as the Flash, he just grows 400 legs on each side and runs like
they start to spin and turn into, you know, cyclonic whirls.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, literally.
Wow. That's a very valid point. I can't argue that.
Mystery. He just sort of wills some little horns on his head and fails miserably. It does. He really hasn't mastered getting into, you know, having that sort of Bruce Wayne kind of cognitive ability, but at least he looks the part. In fact, if he wants to, he looks more like Batman than Batman, just like George Clooney.
Goddamn, George, you beautiful bastard.
I know, my God, it was a god-awful movie, but I will defend with my dying breath that on screen, in costume, George Clooney looks more like Batman than Batman.
That's true. That's true. Oh my God! All right. I'm pulling the plug on this. We need
all right, you better.
Yeah, I'm putting you in a box.
I literally just envisioned Plastic Man turning himself into, you know, so much extension cord that's like red. That about midway down the cord, it's yellow, and then it has like these little, like the either end of the plug in, the receiving end, are kind of fleshy color, and have goggles where the little socket holes would be on the female side.
Yes. Yes.
Does it seem like the sort of thing he would do, like if he was hanging out at the JLA on the satellite or wherever they meet nowadays, in Bruce Wayne's garage or whatever, I could just see him, like if people were having a conversation, he was in another room just kind of hanging out, he would just kind of turn into whatever they were saying.
Yeah, right. And the scary thing about that is he could absolutely conduct electricity.
Oh, absolutely. That's the thing. Yeah, you could literally, if he shaped himself small enough to actually receive you know, your electric fan that was, you're too far away from the wall, he could accommodate you for the duration of your cooling down period.
He could also accommodate you if you were in Sri Lanka and you had a fan and you needed to plug it in Oslo. He could make that happen. That's the thing we're talking about. Like
a 10,000-mile long, and like he would like snake around and then find somebody. Like he'd probably go to like Vandal Savage's place because Vandal Savage deserves to have his electricity bill go skyrocketing.
That's right.
No reason he can fathom.
Because he doesn't even use electricity. He eats bison that he grew.
You go somewhere else in Sri Lanka, like, oh, I forgot the fan, and he just turns himself to the fan. Why didn't you do that in the first place? You didn't even need to anyway, because there was already a fan, and two fans were done.
That's right. And speaking of two fans, we are two fans of comics, gearing up for the biggest show of the year. What's the dates for AllCon this year, Cole?
AllCon this year is, I think, the... Forgive me.
No, that's all right. If only there was a place people could go to find out.
If only I could go to Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info and find my way to their website, or just go to all.com And oh, look, Gerald Holm, Squidhead will be there.
Squidhead will be there.
I love Gerald Holm. If you go to AllCon, you don't have to be a Star Wars fan to absolutely adore Gerald Holm. He has amazing stories, and I've had the good fortune to be able to moderate panels. And he was amazed that I remembered things from him being on panels at AllCon 2005.
So he's one of those AllCon that lifers that comes back because he loves it, not because he needs to pay his mortgage.
The funny thing is, he had not been to all. This is his first AllCon since 2005. Wow. However, last year he was a guest of Infinicon.
Ah.
And that's where I got to moderate his panels, and he was just, and I did the little squid head hand move. He's like, I love this guy. He remembers everything.
Nice.
But that is March 16th through 19th in Addison, Texas. Two floors of the hotel will be taken over largely by AllCon. Free parking. The Crown Plaza in Addison charges you to park. AllCon arranged for free parking. Please come to AllCon without fear of any kind of parking BS. This is our last year at the Crown Plaza. We're coming back to our old home. Crown Plaza, this is the 13th AllCon. Crown Plaza was the home of AllCon for 10 out of 13 years.
It's fantastic.
And next year, AllCon is moving to the Intercontinental in Dallas. And
I can't hear it without thinking about Christopher Walken. I can never hear it without thinking about Christopher Walken.
Oh, please come to AllCon, my frightened little doll. But yeah, do come to AllCon. I will be personally appearing in over a dozen, probably closer to 20 or so events, including very likely they have yet to fail to ask me to host, so I will likely be hosting the opening ceremonies, ideally with Eddie Medina of the Rancor Pit. He and I had a blast last year. Bobby Blakey of BDG Studios will be there, the unmountable Bobby Blakey. He and Drusilla will be hosting the Superhero Sunday. Bacon Samurai Productions and Hit It's Inquisites, along with AllCon Games and Theory / The Jedi Kill Universe / Half-Ass Productions, are producing a massive quantity of game shows. Over 20, I think there's like 27 game shows. Oof. This year,
man.
Plus my own two talk shows, multiple panels, workshops, and of course, Onliners is returning. Our own remarkable work of Andrew Farmer, myself, the folks from SCNS Live, all joining forces to bring you a blatant and complete ripoff.
Total shoehorn ripoff of At Midnight.
I think Rick Gutierrez, the United States of Geekdom, will be doing a game show or two. We have the Kevin Jackson is back. He is not going to be out of town at AllCon, and will be hosting his own anime game shows.
Nice.
Possibly even dressed as Nick Fury. Who knows? And God, what else? There's more things than you can shake a stick.
Yeah.
At.
If you want to know, go to like all-con. It's net, right?
.com actually.
Ah, yes. all-con.com. You know, go over to a Convention Awareness Project Texas. Check out all the conventions that are coming, but especially check out AllCon. Cole, where can you, not that you're not doing enough, but where can everybody find the rest of our stuff?
Well, the rest of our stuff is, of course, available on the Jedi Cole Universe, JediCole.com. We're on Podbean. We're on whatever that one you discovered we were on was.
We're on iTunes. If you find us on iTunes, rate and like us. That's the only way we're going to make money and keep this thing going the way we like to. So,
absolutely.
So make sure
Please,
you do that.
Go do it repeatedly. Be like Gangs of New York. Just, you know, shave off your beard. Go back. Rank us again. Shave off your mustache. Rank us again. We want, and of course, Cinelinks. I'm little by little getting us caught up on Cinelinks. I got a little behind there because I keep wanting to do these ambitious graphics for that site, incorporate their logo into every one of them, and I have a ton of fun doing it. But AllCon is cleaning my clock because I've got so many things to do for AllCon, including the previously mentioned during the show Hey Kids Comics edition of Don't Lose Your Geek Card, the original AllCon game show. That game show was born at AllCon and has been part of that convention for about 8 or 9 years now in various incarnations.
That's right.
And there's also the Rancor Pit edition of that. We're going to be chock-a-block full of Star Wars.
As always.
Half-Ass Productions is producing 3 Star Wars game shows, including The Return of the Galactic Games with myself and Eddie for the Rancor Pit. And his Inquisits are doing Star Wars game shows as well. So there's going to be more Star Wars prize, and the volume of prizes this year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I am going to be able to give away so much stuff. And Thursday is free at AllCon. March 16th, come to the hotel, free parking, free convention. Nobody else is doing that for you. You can come, and it's not like, oh, come to the convention, there's 3 things going on. No, there are things going on all day Thursday. You can come out Wednesday night to the pajama party. And there's dances, and we're going to be here another hour if I get going about AllCon.
Yeah, so we do need to pull the plug.
You know that we will gush ad nauseum about AllCon. So this is AllCon the 13th, so horror is the theme. This year's specialty game show, Scream Time, is my horror game show for the year. And, of course, a play on the Screen Time game show that is never as much fun as it is when I co-host with Andrew. We know exactly which questions to pass to each other, which quotes to pass to each other.
That's right.
Like, this one was written for
tailor-made. All right, speaking of tailor-made, I think we're tailor-made to get out of here.
That time bullet out of here.
Yeah. So buy, collect, enjoy your comics. We've given you so many suggestions that we love over the past 5 issues. Between, you know, Watchmen, we'll never stop talking about. Doom Patrol, I'll never stop talking about. We want to hear about yours. Where can they email us, Cole?
You can email us at jcumail@yahoo.com.
That's right. Just
for now. I'm working on coming up with yet another one because I keep having stuff sent there, and I don't want to lose anybody's stuff in the midst of it all.
So yeah, just make sure you put "Hey Kids Comics" in the subject line so we know what we're looking for. And all that being said, you know, this is a labor of love. We wouldn't do it without you guys. We appreciate your support. Everybody out there, up to and including Spindly Bits, you're the real hero here. You're the MVP. So buy, collect, enjoy your comics. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody. And be sure and spread the word. Tell everybody about Hey Kids Comics if you enjoy what we're doing.
That's right. Spread the word and everything else. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Wear a spacesuit.
Wear your spacesuit before you blast off.